Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for this session. And as we have talked over this year, several times we've had programs on the theme of gratitude, and we pick this theme up from time to time. At the moment, it's a very interesting time for New Zealand because we're right coming through the lockdown. We're actually grappling now with what next and how to evaluate. And there's some people going on the attack and some blaming going on, and there's some people calling for sackings and so on. But at the same time, there are lots of positive assessments and evaluations going on about the lessons learnt and the things that have come out of the woodwork that are so worthwhile. And so today there'll be both positives and negatives in this session, but there'll be a focus on what are the lessons, both for community, for government and organisations, and with an eye to the future. And first of all, you know, the team of New Zealanders, the 5 million odd of us that have come through COVID-19 and the challenges and fears and trauma and upset and job losses and everything else that's going with it, I think it's really something where we need to pat ourselves on the back and say, as we tune into our families and our pets and surroundings, how much positive stuff we did during lockdown, how much progress we made on the communication side, how much progress we made within healing gaps and rifts in friendships and families, how many seemingly inconsequential conversations, but just generally how much closer we got during that time is something that is quite precious. And many folk have said they felt quite healed by the slowdown, by the opportunity to tune in and feel life in a much less hurried way, touching base with what's important, listening to one's body, making changes in sleeping and dietary habits, and considering what's important. What do we want to focus on over the next 2, 3, 4 years? What do we really value? And are our values really up there? Do we actually prioritise them? So quite often we have deeply held values that are really important to us, but are we actually putting those into practice? So recently I was in a coaching session with a client and she said to me, you know, I always say health's number one, but she said, when I actually looked at what I do, where I spend my time, what I prioritise and so on, actually health got to number 12. It wasn't anywhere near number one. It wasn't even the first top five. And I got quite a shock. So she spent the rest of the session looking at how she could change what was happening in her life. So what are the lessons that we've been learning over COVID-19? All of us. What are the things that have really been standout things that I think we need to chalk up? Number one, recognising looking after yourself first is the key to giving your best, and it's the important learning. You know, put your own mask on first, they often used to say on the safety videos on the plane. Well, it's a bit like that in life generally. So self-care and kindness towards yourself, prioritising me time, actually putting that first and actually finding compassion for yourself, because you can't really give it to others unless you're giving it to yourself. I mean, jumping onto bandwagons and attacking people and throwing rocks at other people, that may be quite easy if you've got a surplus of anger and pent-up resentment and frustration. But if you're looking after yourself first, you're more likely to actually take a look at what's happening, observe what's happening, see the human being before you actually throw the rocks. Number two, managing challenges, fears and reactions. Around the world, on the news, we're seeing all the different challenges that different people are facing in different places as cases spike and the leadership in the particular locality says, right, we have to go back into lockdown. So we have whole towns and whole counties and whole states in lockdown in different countries. And some people feeling resentful because across the border the people are not in lockdown. Without recognising, well, hang on, this is actually protecting us. This is actually not done to thwart us. This is actually done for our health and our well-being. Now, we have new challenges. And just when two women travelled out of quarantine on compassionate grounds without being tested, threw a lot of people into some sort of hysteric panic because they feared that we might have to go into a lockdown again, probably wrongly, because the chances of that happening weren't very high, actually. But just the fear and the way it gripped people was something that I think is really noteworthy. It's very easy for reactions to get out of control. And in the States, I've noticed people on webinars suddenly throwing up their hands in horror and overreacting because suddenly they're asked to wear a mask, and if they don't wear a mask, they may be fined and they may be even sent to jail. Now, actually, the outcome here of the woman's journey didn't change our COVID cases. But with more arrivals coming back, we do have risks and we do have a need for a tightening of the border procedures and so on, which is happening. But some people could be more proactive. I mean, people could actually wear masks voluntarily. And I've noticed that one advantage of this is that people keep away from you. And it does actually reduce the chances of you being close in terms of social distancing. People do keep that distance if you're wearing the mask because they're not sure if you've actually got COVID-19. So it's quite a useful strategy, I think. It's quite possible to make your own and make them from cloth. They aren't effective in terms of close-up protection. If you were actually having to deal with someone in your personal space, they won't protect you in that sense, but they could actually be beneficial in other ways. But however we manage whatever challenges come and whatever happens next, we need to be able to stay calm and we need to be able to take two steps back and think about the other persons and persons around us rather than just reacting. Just the extreme of some of the reactions that we've seen suggests that it's a little bit like we've been in a pressure cooker and the lid's been taken off. And without even stopping to reflect or think, people have just kind of exploded like that pressure cooker does when you take the lid off. Number three on my list is systems. Systems come under great scrutiny when there's a crisis. And during the crisis, perhaps not so much, but as we come out of it, people are very, very keen to point fingers and so on. Now, our systems have been tightening up, and with the new leadership coming from MP Megan Woods, who's in charge and is a very competent pair of hands indeed, and alongside the military, we're actually seeing people who are used to following orders and used to having very tight systems. So this is actually going to make quite a huge difference. I think New Zealand has never faced anything like this before, and the kind of people who were managing the front line had not necessarily had relevant experience. Their preparation time was very short, if any, and it was inevitable that some shortfalls and gaps would occur in the system. No country's done anything perfectly, and there are plenty of mistakes if you go looking. Certainly in the UK, there is some suggestion that the government might get rid of the whole department that was managing the pandemic, and that looks quite extreme. But certainly here, things are calming down, and really the questions that come through at the moment seem to be who should be paying for the quarantine. And I guess there will always be some compassionate grounds, but it seems fair that if people are travelling for their own pleasure, that they contribute the $4,000 towards their quarantine. And now, I had a special birthday arranged in Sydney, and the flights were booked well before lockdown, and quarantining wasn't even on the horizon at that stage. But I have cancelled the whole thing because I don't wish to pay $4,000 to come back and quarantine, and I don't want to quarantine at the other end, and I'm not sure that Sydney will have lifted their quarantine requirements by the time the flights were due to go. So I made that decision on sensible, practical grounds, thinking, well, you know, there's always another birthday and there's always another time to do these things. Number four, don't underestimate the amount of learning that all those in key roles have had to do. And I think there's a lot of people now beginning to reassess their workload, their work strategies, how much they need to be in the office and how much they can work from home. There's people looking at what was successful about being more productive working from home, what wasn't, and what kinds of support they need from management. And all of this is creating many conversations amongst people. This is very healthy for organisations to do, because learning organisations are the ones that will pull through threats and challenges. It's what will keep a team unified. It's what will lift productivity in the end. And it may be the difference between surviving as a business or folding up. So all the learning that's gone on has been valuable, but when it gets processed and shared, that's when it's really, really valuable. So I'm going to pick up on these four areas, but in particular, I'm going to be talking about number one, the self-care and kindness and the leadership aspect of that, and number four, the learnings, because I think there are learnings in systems about what happened in rest homes, what happened to seniors, because they were the highest casualty group, and there were some inappropriate messages around them, like seen as vulnerable, when not all seniors are vulnerable, clearly. So, yep, we need to talk about these things more. And right now, we'll have a music break. So I've chosen some Cat Stevens for you, and that piece is Can't Keep It In, and it's thinking of the pressure cooker concept. And so I hope you enjoy the music, and then we'll come back and talk about these aspects of leadership and systems in a bit more detail.
Oh, I can't keep it in. I can't keep it in. I've got to let it out. I've got to show the world. World's got to see. All the love that's in me. I said, why walk alone? Why worry when it's warm over here? You've got so much to say. Say what you mean. Mean what you think and think anything. Oh, why? Why must you waste your life away?
spins my head and my hair falls in love. Oh.
Welcome back, everyone, and we're talking about the lessons learnt during COVID-19 and beyond lockdown. And the Prime Minister's been praised for her leadership around the world. So I'm wanting to focus on leadership because this is really important, not just at the Prime Minister level. There have been these reactions and people calling for sackings and heads to roll, and there's been some examination of our systems, recognising that humans make errors. This is a new experience, and we haven't had anything like COVID-19 ever before. I mean, some talk about the Great Depression, some talk about World War II, some 1918 share crash, and some the 2008 international financial markets crash. But economically, this is actually bigger than any of these, and we've yet to come out the other end. So our Prime Minister's calmness, her decisiveness, her daily presentations and her calls for kindness all played a key role. It was a quality act. It wasn't just a five-minute wonder. It was something quite dedicated and consistent and with a deep depth of integrity that was enabled us to feel unified as a country. That's what's important. Because when we think about that, there's not a lot of people who can actually rise to that style of leadership and carry it off for that length of time. Hilary Starr Fogarty is a person who writes on leadership and who has lectured on leadership over many years, and in her writing on leadership at this time, she's talking about how critically important kindness and pastoral care have become to ensure staff in organisations get support and ensure that organisations work effectively through this kind of disaster. She talks about skilled communications as being of extreme importance, and this being modelled by the Prime Minister certainly helped and then was mirrored by very good leaders in organisations, including messages of caring, providing updates regularly, allowing people the time and space to organise and coordinate work with their family, changes and things that were needed in environments. I mean, meetings were by Zoom. A lot of people had never done Zoom before, including myself. Some meetings for community were held in garages because their normal places were closed. And staff needing ongoing support stuff, planning ahead for things that were going to happen next year and the year after, needing to consider how they balanced working from home, how they balanced having their kids home from school and so on. This actually required a whole different sense of what work is and how work gets done. And Hillary also mentioned planning ahead, the recognition of how much work people did at home, how productive they were, how useful that was to the organisation and so on. So she's focused on those four areas. Now, although Dr. Ashley Bloomfield has been publicly acknowledged for his leadership, she highlighted how consistent he was in demonstrating clarity, empathy, despite even being new in his role. And a lot of people might not have realised that he hadn't been Director General of Health for that long before coming into this COVID-19 situation. Now, she also mentions Kerry Nuku, who Kerry has been regularly on TV during the lockdown. She was representing New Zealand Nurses Association, speaking with authority and concern regarding the frontline health staff. And she was praised for her leadership by a number of colleagues and by Māori television, and mainly because she's persistent, determined. She's advocates strongly with tenacity, but she is also mindful of what good leadership is about. So she's authentic, sincere, genuine, and encouraging people to believe they can succeed. And that's really important. So I thought I'd just take a couple of quotes from one from the American Psychological Association, from an article entitled How Leaders Can Maximize Trust and Minimize Stress During COVID-19. Now, their statement was, during uncertain and fluid times, the need for strong, calm, trustworthy leadership is more important than ever. Now, it just might seem trite and a general kind of statement, but they're an authority. They're an authority recognised around the world, and I think that's important. And it also relates to why Jacinda Ardern was so widely praised overseas. And some of our local writers, like Selwyn Kartani, has talked about leadership as adaptability, flexibility and clarity being the core strengths. And that's what has come out from within Māori organisations, particularly on the East Coast, where they were very successful in completely taking charge of the whole testing regime, the whole support for families, the food supplies, reducing the trips that people had to make, long highway trips that were expensive, time-consuming and frustrating and stressful. And they got rid of all of that, brought the food locally to people and ensured that people were much safer, and so they had no accidents and no injuries on the road, and they had no deaths from COVID-19, and they had only, I think, 5 cases that were relatively mild. So they did extremely well, and I'm sure that in times to come, when more assessment is done, their standout leadership will be acknowledged. Now, a well-known writer, Peter Singh, whose book The Fifth Discipline has been quoted often, writing about learning organisations, has said that the learning and innovation and creativity of community leaders has been impressive during this time. So he's actually been reflecting on what he's seen around the world. And Dr. Cherry Spiller, from her book Wayfinding Leadership, that's been released by Huia Publishing in New Zealand, she often comments on Indigenous-based leadership and wisdom across the Pacific. She believes leadership requires stepping into the unknown, sharpening powers of observation, being more comfortable with uncertainty, finding new and better ways to tackle situations. So wayfinder leaders look to develop everyone's potential and have an abiding belief that we're in the waka together. Eki waka noa. So with all of that in mind, I'm actually coming now to consider what's happened for seniors. And there are pluses and minuses. But I draw from Nairi Kersa's report. She's a senior lecturer at Auckland University, and she also reports to the New Zealand Association of Gerontology. And she says there were five clusters in aged residential care, all associated with overseas travel, and staff were probably infected first. So that was the first mistake, that there was no procedure in place to prevent such people being employed in rest homes, putting seniors at great risk. In some clusters, reporting was delayed, complicating the contact tracing. Of 428 possible residents, 8 were affected, and a total cluster of 159 cases were involved. So Ashley Bloomfield commissioned a report on the aged care breakouts or outbreaks to identify relevant factors and inform future processes. It's a sign of a good leader. Now, the staff in the facilities that were involved in the outbreaks were interviewed, along with DHB and public health personnel in areas of the major clusters, and all 12 facilities were involved. So this is a very well-written report with a clear description of events, decisions, consequences and aspects. I won't go into all of it, but one of the things that I must say, before we think about a witch hunt about staff, many staff experienced extreme stress, and it wasn't just as a result of work pressure, but because of landlords and flatmates who were hostile to their presence. They were in a known cluster, so they were a potential carrier of COVID-19 and looked on with suspicion. There's a lot of learnings that I don't mind bringing out at a later point, but staff turnover was reduced during the lockdown, and there was collegiality, mutual support and closeness amongst staff and residents. I do know across the Tasman and parts of New South Wales where it was dangerous during the bushfires, staff actually stayed with the residents rather than going home. So we know that staff often have the residents' issues at the forefront of their thinking and planning, and so it's not appropriate to blame them. But I do think that we've got lots more lessons to learn from studying these reports. But one of the clear things that's come out of all of this is the call for an aged care commissioner. Because had there been an aged care commissioner, that person could have taken charge very immediately, and some of those preventable deaths would have been prevented in those rest homes if they had procedures in place, and if there was a commissioner overseeing those procedures, things could have happened. We could have had a Megan Woods military style operation, and we could have saved lives. So this call for an aged care commissioner, it will continue. It's not sufficient to have a kind of ombudsman figure overseeing things where there's just a kind of, we can keep tabs on this and we can go to court. No, we need far more than this. We need someone who has the power to take action when it's needed during the disaster or the pandemic. And we're going to have more pandemics. There will be one every 10 years, according to the top scientists. So we need to be ready and we need to put things in place. And this should be part of the conversation of evaluating what we have done and what we haven't done. So keep your eyes on the ball for this, because we as the senior community need to really get that message out that an aged care commissioner has enormous value for the well-being of seniors, and we really need to make sure our MPs hear that, particularly in the lead up to the election. It's not a party thing, because neither party supports this. We just need to make sure that an aged care commissioner is something that we have in New Zealand like other countries. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.